member of the Guild of Mercers?
Yes, yes.
One of Magister Colt's deputies, in fact?
You know I am.
Have you conspired with other mercers to defraud His Majesty the King? Did you hire an assassin to willfully murder 10 of His Majesty's subjects? Were you ordered so to do by Magister Costardan Colt, the head of the Guild of Mercers?
No!
Shouted Hornlack, voice squeaky with panic. That is not the answer we need. Glockter glanced up at Practical Frost. The big white fist sank into the merchant's gut, and he gave a gentle sigh and slid sideways. My mother keeps dogs, you know, said Glockter. Dogs, hissed Severard in the gasping merchant's ear as he shoved him back into the chair. She loves them, trains them to do all manner of tricks. Glockter pursed his lips. Do you know how dogs are trained? Hornlack was still winded, lolling in his chair with watering eyes, some way from being able to speak. Still at that stage of a fish pulled suddenly from the water, mouth opening and closing, but no sound. Repetition, said Glockter. Repeat, repeat, repeat. You must have that dog perform his tricks 100 times the same, and then you must do it all again. It's all about repetition, and if you want that dog to bark on cue, you mustn't be shy with the whip. You're going to bark for me, Hornlack, in front of the open council.
You're mad!
Cried the mercer, staring around at them.
You're all mad!
Glockter flashed his empty smile. If you like. If it helps. He glanced back at the paper in his hand. What is your name? The prisoner swallowed.
Gottfried Hornlack.
You are a senior member of the Guild of Mercers?
Yes.
One of Magister Colt's deputies, in fact?
Yes.
Have you conspired with other mercers to defraud His Majesty the King? Did you hire an assassin to willfully murder 10 of His Majesty's subjects? Were you ordered so to do by Magister Costardan Colt, the head of the Guild of Mercers? Hornlack cast desperately around him. Frost stared back. Severard stared back. Well? Demanded Glockter. The merchant closed his eyes.
Yes,
he whimpered. What's that?
Yes!
Glockter smiled. Excellent. Now, tell me, what is your name? Chapter 18 Tea and Vengeance. It's a beautiful country, isn't it? Asked Baez, staring up at the rugged fells on either side of the road. Their horses' hooves thumped slowly along the track, the steady sound at odds with Logan's unease. Is it? Well, it's a hard country, of course, to those who don't know its ways, a tough country and unforgiving, but there's something noble there, too. The first of the Magi swept his arm across the view, breathed in the cold air with relish. It has honesty, integrity. The best steel doesn't always shine the brightest. He glanced over, swaying gently in his saddle. You should know that.
I can't say I see the beauty of it.
No? What do you see? Logan let his eyes wander over the steep, grassy slopes, spotted with patches of sedge and brown gorse, studded with outcrops of grey rock and stands of trees.
I see good ground for a battle, provided you got here first.
Really? How so? Logan pointed at a knobbly hilltop.
Archers on the bluff there couldn't be seen from the road, and you could hide most of your foot in these rocks. A few of the lightest armoured left on the slopes, just to draw the enemy on up the steepest ground there.
He pointed to the thorny bushes that covered the lower slopes.
You'd let them come on away. Then, when they were struggling through that gorse, you'd give them the arrows. Shafts falling on you from above like that, that's no fun at all. They come quicker and further, and they bite deeper. That'd break them up. By the time they got to the rocks, they'd be dog-tired and running short on discipline. That would be the time to charge. A bunch of carls leaping out of those stones, charging down from above, fresh and keen and screaming like devils. That could break 'em right there.
Logan narrowed his eyes at the hillside. He'd been on both sides of a surprise like that, and in neither case was the memory a pleasant one.
But if they had a mind to hold, a few horsemen in those trees could finish it up. A few named men, a few hard fighters, bearing down on you from a place you never expected them, that's a terrifying thing. That'd make them run. But tired as they'd be, they wouldn't run too fast. That means prisoners, and prisoners might mean ransoms, or at least enemies cheaply killed. I see a slaughter, or a victory worth the singing, depending which side you're on. That's what I see.
Baez smiled, head nodding with the slow movement of his horse.
Was it Stolichus who said, "The ground must be a general's best friend, or it becomes his worst enemy"?
I never heard of him, but he was right enough. This is good ground for an army, providing you got here first. Get in there first is the trick.
Indeed. We don't have an army, however.
These trees could hide a few horsemen even better than a lot.
Logan glanced sidelong at the wizard. He was slouched happily in the saddle, enjoying a pleasant ride in the country.
I don't think Bethod will have appreciated your advice, and I had scores enough with him already. He got wounded where he feels it most, in his pride. He'll want vengeance, want it badly.
Ah, yes, vengeance. That most widespread of northern pastimes. Its popularity never seems to wane.
Logan stared grimly around at the trees, the rocks, the folds in the valley's sides, the many hiding places.
There'll be men out in these hills looking for us. Small bands of skilled and battle-hardened men, well-mounted and well-armed, familiar with the land. Now Bethod has finished all his enemies, there's nowhere in the north out of his reach. They might be waiting there, he pointed off towards some rocks by the road, or in those trees, or those.
Malachus Quai, riding up ahead with the pack horse, glanced nervously around.
They could be anywhere.
Does that frighten you? Asked Baez.
Everything frightens me, and it's well that it does. Fear is a good friend to the hunted. It's kept me alive this long. The dead are fearless, and I don't care to join them. He'll send men to the library, too.
Oh, yes, to burn my books and so on.
Does that frighten you?
Not much. The stones by the gate have the word of Juvens on them, and that is not to be denied even now. No one with violence in mind can come near. I imagine Bethod's men will wander around the lake in the rain until they run out of food, all the while thinking how very strange it is that they cannot find so large a thing as a library.
No, said the wizard happily, scratching at his beard. I would concentrate on our own predicament. What happens, do you think, if we're caught?
Bethod will kill us, and in the most unpleasant manner he can think of. Unless he has it in mind to be merciful and let us off with a warning.
That doesn't seem likely. I've been thinking the same thing.
Our best chance is to make for the White Flow, try to get across the river into Angland, and trust to luck we aren't seen.
Logan didn't like trusting to luck. The very word left a sour taste. He peered up at the cloudy sky.
We could do with some bad weather. A healthy downpour could hide us nicely.
The skies had been pissing on him for weeks, but now that he needed rain, they refused to produce a drop. Malachus Quai was looking over his shoulder at them, his eyes big and round with worry.
Shouldn't we try to move faster?
Perhaps, said Logan, patting the neck of his horse. But that would tire the horses, and we may need all the speed we can get later. We could hide in the day and travel by night, but then we risk getting lost. We're better as we are. Move slowly and hope we aren't seen.
He frowned at the hilltop.
Hope we haven't been seen already.
Hmm, said Baez.
Then this might be the best time to tell you. That witch Kaurib isn't half the fool I pretended she was.
Logan felt a sinking sensation.
No? No, for all her paint and gold and chat about the utmost north, she knows what she is about. The long eye, they call it. An old trick, but effective. She has been watching us.
She knows where we are.
She knows when we left, more than likely, and in what direction we were heading.
That does nothing for our chances.
I should say not. Shit.
Logan caught some movement in the trees to their left, and he snatched hold of the hilt of his sword. A couple of birds took to the skies. He waited, heart in his mouth. Nothing. He let his hand drop back.
We should have killed them while we had the chance, all three of them.
But we didn't, and there it is.
Baez looked over at Logan.
If they do catch us, what's your plan?
Run, and hope our horses are the faster.
And this one? Asked Baez. The wind blew keenly through the hollow in spite of the trees, making the flames of the campfire flicker and dance. Malachus Quai hunched his shoulders and drew his blanket tight around them. He peered at the short stem that Baez was holding up to him, forehead crinkled with concentration. This was the fifth plant, and the miserable apprentice had yet to get one of them right.
Is that, Ilias?
Ilias?
Echoed the wizard, his face giving no clue as to whether it was the right answer. He was merciless as Bethod where his apprentice was concerned.
Perhaps?
Hardly.
The apprentice closed his eyes and sighed for the fifth time that evening. Logan felt for him, he really did, but there was nothing to be done.
Ursulum, in the old tongue, the round-leafed kind.
Yes, yes, of course, Ursulum, it was at the end of my tongue the whole time.
If the name was at the end of your tongue, then the uses of the plant cannot be far behind, eh?
The apprentice narrowed his eyes and looked hopefully up towards the night sky, as though the answer might be written in the stars.
Is it for aches in the joints?
No, it is decidedly not. I'm afraid your aching joints will still be troubling you.
Baez turned the stem slowly round in his fingers.
Ursulum has no uses, not that I know of. It's just a plant.
And he tossed it away into the bushes.
Just a plant,
echoed Quai, shaking his head. Logan sighed and rubbed his tired eyes.
I'm sorry, Master Nine Fingers, are we boring you?
What does it matter?
Asked Logan, throwing his hands up in the air.
Who cares about the name of a plant with no use?
Baez smiled.
A fair point. Tell us, Malachus, what does it matter?
If a man seeks to change the world, he should first understand it.
The apprentice trotted the words out as if by rote, evidently relieved to be asked a question he knew the answer to.
The smith must learn the ways of metals, the carpenter the ways of wood, or their work will be of but little worth. Base magic is wild and dangerous, for it comes from the other side, and to draw from the world below is fraught with peril. The magus tempers magic with knowledge, and thus produces high art. But like the smith or the carpenter, he should only seek to change that which he understands. With each thing he learns, his power is increased. So must the magus strive to learn all, to understand the world entire. The tree is only as strong as its root, and knowledge is the root of power.
Don't tell me, Juven's principles of art.
The very first lines, said Baez.
Forgive me for saying so, but I've been on this world for more than 30 years, and I've yet to understand a single thing that's happened. To know the world completely? To understand everything? That's quite a task.
The Magus chuckled. An impossible one, to be sure. To truly know and understand even a blade of grass is the study of a lifetime, and the world is ever-changing. That is why we tend to specialize.
So, what did you choose?
Fire, said Baez, gazing happily into the flames, the light dancing on his bald head. Fire and force and will. But even in my chosen fields, after countless long years of study, I remain a novice. The more you learn, the more you realize how little you know. Still, the struggle itself is worthwhile. Knowledge is the root of power, after all.
So, with enough knowledge, you Magi can do anything?
Baez frowned. There are limits, and there are rules.
Like the first law?
Master and apprentice glanced up at Logan as one.
It's forbidden to speak with devils, am I right?
It was plain that Quai didn't remember his fevered outburst. His mouth was open with surprise. Baez's eyes only narrowed a little, with the faintest trace of suspicion. Why, yes, you are, said the first of the Magi. It is forbidden to touch the other side direct. The first law must apply to all without exception, as must the second.
Which is?
It is forbidden to eat the flesh of men.
Logan raised an eyebrow.
You wizards get up to some strange stuff.
Baez smiled.
Oh, you don't know the half of it.
He turned to his apprentice, holding up a lumpy brown root. And now, Master Quai, would you be good enough to tell me the name of this?
Logan couldn't help grinning to himself. He knew this one.
Come, come, Master Quai, we don't have all night.
Logan wasn't able to stand the apprentice's misery any longer. He leaned toward him, pretending to poke at the fire with a stick, coughed to conceal his words, and whispered,
Crowsfoot,
under his breath. Baez was a good distance away, and the wind was still rustling in the trees. There was no way the Magus could have heard him. Quai played his part well. He continued to peer at the root, brow knitted in thought.
Is it Crowsfoot?
He ventured. Baez raised an eyebrow.
Why, yes it is. Well done, Malachus. And can you tell me its uses?
Logan coughed again.
Wounds,
he whispered, looking carelessly off into the bushes, one hand shielding his mouth. He might not know too much about plants, but on the subject of wounds, he had a wealth of experience.
I believe it's good for wounds, said Quai slowly. Excellent, Master Quai. Crow's foot is correct, and it is good for wounds. I am glad to see we are making some progress after all.
He cleared his throat.
It does seem curious that you should use that name, however. They only call this Crow's Foot north of the mountains. I certainly never taught you that name. I wonder who it is you know from that part of the world.
He glanced over at Logan.
Have you ever considered a career in the magical arts, Master Nine Fingers?
He narrowed his eyes at Quai once more.
I may have space for an apprentice.
Malachus hung his head.
Sorry, Master Baez. You are indeed.
Perhaps you could clean the pots for us. That task may be better suited to your talents.
Quai reluctantly shrugged off his blanket, collected the dirty bowls, and shuffled off through the brush towards the stream. Baez bent over the pot on the fire, adding some dried-up leaves to the bubbling water. The flickering light of the flames caught the underside of his face,
The steam curled around his bald head. All in all, he looked quite the part.
"What is that?" asked Logan, reaching for his pipe. "Some spell? Some potion? Some great work of high art?"
"Tea."
"Eh?"
"Leaves of a certain plant boiled up in water. It is considered quite a luxury in Gurkle." He poured some of the brew out into a cup.
"Would you like to try it?"
Logan sniffed at it suspiciously.
"Smells like feet."
"Suit yourself." Baez shook his head and sat back down beside the fire, wrapping both hands around the steaming cup. "But you're missing out on one of nature's greatest gifts to man." He took a sip and smacked his lips in satisfaction. "Calming to the mind, invigorating to the body. There are few ills a good cup of tea won't help with." Logan pressed a lump of chagger into the bowl of his pipe.
"How about an axe in the head?"
"That's one of them," admitted Byers with a grin.
"Tell me, Master Nine Fingers, why all the blood between you and Bethod? Did you not fight for him many times? Why do you hate each other so?"
Logan paused as he was sucking smoke from the pipe, let his breath out.
"There are reasons," he said stiffly.
The wounds of that time were still raw. He didn't like anyone picking at them.
"Ah, reasons."
Baez looked down at his teacup.
"And what of your reasons? Does this feud not cut both ways?"
"Perhaps."
"But you are willing to wait?"
"I'll have to be."
You are very patient for a Northman."
Logan thought of Bethod and his loathsome sons, and the many good men they'd killed for their ambitions, the men he'd killed for their ambitions. He thought of the Shankar and his family, and the ruins of the village by the sea. He thought of all his dead friends. He sucked at his teeth and stared at the fire.
"I've settled a few scores in my time, but it only led to more. Vengeance can feel fine, but it's a luxury. It doesn't fill your belly or keep the rain off. To fight my enemies, I need friends behind me. And I'm clean out of friends. You have to be realistic. It's been a while since my ambitions went beyond getting through each day alive."
Baez laughed, his eyes glittering in the firelight.
"What?"
asked Logan, handing the pipe across to him.
"No offense, but you are an endless source of surprises. Not at all what I was expecting. You are quite the riddle."
"Me?"
"Oh, yes. The Bloody Nine," he whispered, opening his eyes up wide. "That's one bastard of a reputation you're carrying, my friend. The stories they tell. One bastard of a name. Why, mothers scare their children with it."
Logan said nothing. There was no denying it. Baez sucked slowly on the pipe, then blew out a long plume of smoke.
"I've been thinking about the day that Prince Calder paid us a visit."
Logan snorted.
"I try not to spare him too much thought."
"Nor I. But it wasn't his behavior that interested me. It was yours."
"It was? I don't remember doing a thing."
Baez pointed the stem of the pipe at Logan from across the fire.
"Ah, but that is my point exactly. I have known many fighting men, soldiers and generals and champions and whatnot. A great fighter must act quickly, decisively, whether with his own arm or with an army, for he who strikes first often strikes last. So fighters come to rely on their baser instincts, to answer always with violence, to become proud and brutal."
Baez passed the pipe back to Logan.
"But whatever the stories, you are not such a one."
"I know plenty who disagree."
"Perhaps. But the fact remains, Calder slighted you, and you did nothing. So you know when you should act, and act quickly, but you also know when not to. That shows restraint and a calculating mind."
Perhaps I was just afraid.
Of him? Come now. You didn't seem afraid of Scale, and he's a deal more worrying. And you walked 40 miles with my apprentice over your back, and that shows courage and compassion, too. A rare combination indeed. Violence and restraint, calculation and compassion. And you speak to the spirits, too.
Logan raised an eyebrow.
Not often, and only when there's no one else around. Their talk is dull, and not half so flattering as yours.
Ha! That's true. The spirits have little to say to men, I understand, though I have never spoken with them. I have not the gift. Few have these days.
He took another swallow from his cup, peering at Logan over the rim.
I can scarcely think of another one alive.
Malachus stumbled from the trees, shivering, and set the wet bowls down. He grabbed his blanket, wrapped it tightly around him, then peered hopefully at the steaming pot on the fire.
Is that tea?
Baez ignored him.
Tell me, Master Nine Fingers, in all the time since you arrived at my library, you have never once asked me why I sent for you, or why now we are wandering through the north in peril of our lives. That strikes me as odd.
Not really. I don't want to know.
Don't want to?
All my life I've sought to know things. What's on the other side of the mountains? What are my enemies thinking? What weapons will they use against me? What friends can I trust?
Logan shrugged.
Knowledge may be the root of power, but each new thing I've learned has left me worse off.
He sucked again on the pipe. But it was finished. He tapped the ashes out onto the ground.
Whatever it is you want from me, I will try to do. But I don't want to know until it's time. I'm sick of making my own decisions. They're never the right ones. Ignorance is the sweetest medicine, my father used to say. I don't want to know.
Baez stared at him. It was the first time Logan had seen the first of the Magi look at all surprised.
Malachus Quai cleared his throat.
"I'd like to know,"
he said in a small voice, looking hopefully up at his master.
"Yes," murmured Baez, "but you don't get to ask."
It was around midday that it all went wrong. Logan was just starting to think that they might make it to the White Flow, maybe even live out the week. It felt as if he lost his concentration for just a moment. Unfortunately, it was the one moment that mattered. Still, it was well done, you had to give them that. They'd chosen their spot carefully, and tied rags around their horses' hooves to muffle the sound. Three Trees might have seen it coming if he'd been with them, but he had an eye for the ground like no other. The Dogman might have smelled them if he'd been there, but he had the nose for it. The fact was, neither of them was there. The dead are no help at all. There were three horsemen, waiting for them as they rounded a blind corner, well-armed and armoured, dirty faces but clean weapons, veterans each man. The one on the right was thick-set and powerful-looking, with almost no neck. The one on the left was tall and gaunt, with small, hard eyes. Both of them had round helmets, coats of weathered mail, and long spears lowered and ready. Their leader sat on his horse like a bag of turnips, slouched in the saddle with the ease of the expert horseman. He nodded to Logan.
Nine Fingers, the Brin, the Bloody Nine. It's right good to see you again.
Blacktoe, muttered Logan, forcing a friendly smile onto his face. It'd warm my heart to see you, too, if things were different.
But they are as they are.
The old warrior's eyes moved slowly over Baez, Quai, and Logan as he spoke, taking in their weapons, or the lack of them, working out his game. A stupider opponent could have evened up the odds, but Blacktoe was a named man and no fool. His eyes came to rest on Logan's hand as it crept slowly across his body towards the hilt of his sword, and he shook his head slowly.
None of your tricks, Bloody Nine. You can see we've got you.
And he nodded over at the trees behind them.
Logan's heart sank even lower. Two more riders had appeared and were trotting forwards to complete the trap, their muffled hooves barely making a sound on the soft ground by the road. Logan chewed his lip. Black Toe was right, damn him. The four horsemen closed in, lowered spear points swaying, faces cold, minds set to the task. Malachus Quai stared at them with frightened eyes, his horse shying back. Baez smiled pleasantly, as though they were his oldest friends. Logan would have liked a touch of the wizard's composure. His own heart was hammering, his mouth was sour. Black Toe nudged his horse forward, one hand gripping the shaft of his axe, the other resting on his knee, not even using the reins. He was a masterful horseman, famous for it. That's what happens when a man loses all his toes to the frost. Riding is quicker than walking, that has to be admitted, but when it came to fighting, Logan preferred to keep his feet firmly on the ground.
"Better be coming with us now," said the old warrior. "Better all round."
Logan could hardly agree, but the odds were stacked high against him. A sword may have a voice, as Baez had said, but a spear is a damn good thing for poking a man off a horse, and there were four of them closing in around him. He was caught, outnumbered, off guard, and with the wrong tools for the task. Yet again. Best to play for time, and hope some chance might show itself. Logan cleared his throat, doing his best to take the fear out of his voice.
"Never thought you'd make your peace with Bethard, Black Toe. Not you."
The old warrior scratched at his long matted beard.
"I was one of the last, truth be told. But I knelt in the end, same as all the rest. Can't say I liked it any, but there it is. Best let me have the blade, Nine Fingers. What about old man Yawl? You telling me he bows to Bethard? Or did you just find a master to suit you better?"
Black Toe didn't get upset by the jibe, not in the least. He just looked sad and tired.
"Yawl's dead, as though you didn't know. Most of 'em are. Bethard doesn't suit me much at all as a master, and nor do his sons. No man likes licking Scales, fat arse, or Calder's skinny one, you should know that. Now give up the sword. The day's wasting and we've ground to cover. We can talk just as well with you unarmed."
"Yawl's dead."
"Aye," said Black Toe suspiciously. "He offered Bethard a duel, didn't you hear? The feared done for him."
"Feared?
Where have you been, under a mountain?"
"More or less."
"What's this feared?" "I don't know what he is."
Black Toe leaned from his saddle and spat in the grass.
"I heard he's not a man at all. They say that bitch Cowrib dug him out from under a hill. Who knows? Leastways, he's Bethard's new champion, and far nastier even than the last, no offense."
"None at all," said Logan. The man with no neck had moved in close. A little too close, perhaps. The point of his spear was hovering only a foot or two away. Close enough for Logan to grab a hold of, maybe.
"Old man Yawl was a strong hand." "Aye, that's why we followed him. But it done him no good. This feared broke him bad, like he was no more than a dog. Left him alive, if you could call it that, so we could learn from his mistake. But he didn't live long. Most of us knelt right then, those with wives and sons to think on. No sense in putting it off. There's a few of them still up in the mountains who won't bow to Bethard. That moon-worshipping madman Crummocky Fail and his hillmen, and a few beside, but not many. And those there are, Bethard's got plans for."
Black Toe held out a big, calloused hand.
"Better let me have the blade, Bloody Nine. Left hand only, if you please. Slow as slow, and none of your tricks. Better all round."
So that was it. Out of time. Logan wrapped the three fingers of his left hand round the hilt of his sword, the cold metal pressing into his palm. The big man's spear point edged a little closer. The tall one had relaxed a little, confident they had him. His spear was pointing up into the air, unready. There was no telling what the two behind were doing. The desire to glance over his shoulder was almost irresistible, but Logan forced himself to look ahead.
"I always had respect for you, Nine Fingers, even though we stood on different sides. I've no feud with you. But Bethard wants vengeance. He's drunk on it. And I swore to serve."
Black Toe looked him sadly in the eye.
"I'm sorry it's me, for what it's worth."
"Likewise," muttered Logan.
"I'm sorry it's you." He slid the sword slowly from the scabbard.
"For what it's worth!"
And he snapped his arm out, smashing the sword's pommel into Black Toe's mouth. The old warrior gave a squawk as the dull metal crunched into his teeth and tumbled backwards out of the saddle, his axe flying from his hand and clattering into the road. Logan grabbed hold of the shaft of the big man's spear just below the blade.
"Go!"
he bellowed at Kwai, but the apprentice only stared back, blinking. The man with no neck pulled hard at the spear, nearly jerking Logan out of the saddle, but he kept his grip. He reared up in the stirrups, raising the sword high above his head. Necklace took one hand from his spear, his eyes going wide, and held it up on an instinct. Logan swung the sword down with all his strength. He was shocked by the sharpness of it. It took the big man's arm off just below the elbow, then struck into his shoulder, cleaving through the fur and the mail beneath, and splitting him to his stomach near in half. Blood showered across the road, spattering in the face of Logan's horse. It was trained for riding, but not for war, and it reared and span around, kicking and plunging in a panic. It was the best Logan could do to stay on top of the damn thing. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Baez smack Kwai's horse on the rump, and it sped off with the apprentice bouncing in the saddle, the pack horse galloping along behind. Then everything was a mess of plunging and snorting beasts, clashing and scraping metal, curses and cries. Battle. A familiar place, but no less terrifying for that. Logan clung to the reins with his right hand as his horse bucked and thrashed, swinging the sword wildly round his head, more to scare his enemies than hurt them. Every moment he expected the jolt and searing pain as he was stuck through with a spear, then the ground to rush up and smack him in the face. He saw Kwai and Baez galloping away down the road, hotly pursued by the tall man, his spear couched under his arm. He saw Black Toe rolling to his feet, spitting blood, scrambling for his axe. He saw the two men who'd come from behind fighting for control of their own twisting horses, spears waving in their hands. He saw the body of the one he'd just killed, loll in half and topple slowly out of the saddle, blood pouring out over the muddy ground. Logan squawked as he felt a spear point dig into the back of his shoulder, and he was shoved forward, almost over his horse's head. Then he realized he was facing down the road and still alive. He dug his heels into the flanks of his horse and it sped away, sending mud flying from its hooves and into the faces of the men behind. He fumbled the sword across into his right hand, nearly dropping the reins and falling into the road. He shrugged his shoulder, but the wound didn't feel too bad. He could still move the arm all right. "I'm still alive. Still alive." The road flashed by beneath him, the wind stinging his eyes. He was making ground on the tall man. The rags on his horse's hooves were slowing him down now, slipping on the muddy ground. Logan gripped the hilt of the sword as hard as he could, raised it behind him. The head of his enemy snapped round, but too late. There was a hollow bonk of metal on metal as sword smashed into helmet, leaving a deep dent and sending the tall man sprawling. His head bounced once against the road, foot still caught in one stirrup. Then he came free and tumbled over and over on the grass, arms and legs flopping. His riderless horse galloped on, eyes rolling at Logan as he passed.
"Still alive."
Logan looked over his shoulder. Black Toe was back in the saddle and galloping after him, axe raised above his head, tangled hair flying out behind. The two other spearmen were with him, urging their horses forwards, but there was still some distance between them. Logan laughed. Perhaps he'd make it after all. He waved his sword at Black Toe as the road entered a wood in the valley's bottom.
"I'm still alive!"
he screamed at the top of his voice, and then his horse pulled up so suddenly that Logan was almost flung over its head. It was only by throwing one arm round its neck that he kept his seat at all. As soon as he fell back into the saddle, he saw the problem, and it was a bad one. Several tree trunks had been hauled across the road, their branches chopped off and the stumps filed down to vicious points, sticking out in all directions. Two more mailed carles stood in front, spears at the ready. Even the best of horsemen couldn't have jumped that barrier, and Logan wasn't the best of horsemen. Baez and his apprentice had reached the same decision. Both sat still on their horses before the barricade, the old man looking puzzled, the young one simply scared. Logan fingered the grip of his sword and cast desperately around, peering into the trees for some way out. He saw more men now, archers. One, then two, then three of them, creeping slowly forward on both sides of the road, arrows nocked and strings drawn back. Logan turned round in the saddle, but Blacktoe and his two companions were trotting up. There was no escape that way. They reined in a few strides away, well out of reach of Logan's sword. His shoulders slumped. The chase was done. Blacktoe leaned over and spat some blood onto the ground.
All right, Bloody Nine. That's as far as you go.
Funny thing, muttered Logan, looking down at the long grey blade of the sword, dashed and spattered with red. All that time I fought for Bethard against you, and now you fight for him against me. Seems we're never on the same side, and he's the only winner. Funny thing.
Aye, mumbled Blacktoe through his bloody lips.
Funny. But no one was laughing. Blacktoe and his carles had faces hard as death. Quai looked on the verge of tears. Only Baez, for reasons beyond understanding, still had his customary good humor.
All right, Nine Fingers, get off the horse. Bethard wants you alive, but he'll take you dead if he has to. Down, now!
Logan's thoughts began to turn to how they might escape once he'd given up. Blacktoe wasn't like to make a mistake once he had them. Logan would likely be kicked half to death for the fight he'd given them already, if they didn't take his kneecaps off. They'd be trussed up tight like chickens for the slaughter. He pictured himself flung down on the stones with half a mile of chain around him, Bethod smiling down from his throne, Calder and Scale laughing, probably poking at him with something sharp. Logan looked around. He looked at the cold arrowheads and the cold spear points, and the cold eyes of the men pointing them. There was no way out of this little spot.
All right, you win.
Logan threw his sword down, point first. He had it in mind that it would bite into the soil and stand there, swaying back and forth, but it toppled over and clattered against the dirt. It was that sort of day. He slowly swung one leg over the saddle and slid down into the road.
That's better. Now the rest of you.
Quai instantly slithered off his horse and stood there, glancing nervously up at Baez, but the Magus made no move. Blacktoe frowned and hefted his axe.
You too, old man.
I prefer to ride. Logan winced. That was not the right answer. Any moment now Blacktoe would give the order. The bowstrings would sing, and the first of the Magi would drop into the road, stuck full of arrows, probably still with that infuriating smile on his dead face. But the order never came. There was no word of command, no strange incantation, no arcane gestures. The air around Baez's shoulders seemed to shimmer, like the air above the land on a hot day, and Logan felt a strange tugging at his guts. Then the trees exploded in a wall of searing, blinding, white-hot flame. Trunks burst and branches snapped with deafening cracks, venting plumes of brilliant fire and scalding steam. One burning arrow shot high up into the air over Logan's head, and then the archers were gone, boiled away into the furnace. Logan choked and gasped, reeled back in shock and terror, arm up to ward his face from the blistering heat. The barricade was sending up great gouts of fire and blinding sparks. The two men who had been standing near were rolling and thrashing, wreathed in hungry flames, their screams lost in the deafening roar. The horses plunged and reeled, snorting with mad fear. Blacktoe was flung to the ground for the second time, his flaming axe flying from his hands, and his horse stumbled and fell, crashing down on top of him. One of his companions was even less lucky, thrown straight into the sheets of fire by the road, his despairing cry quickly cut off. Only one stayed upright, and he was lucky enough to be wearing gloves. By some miracle, he kept hold of the burning shaft of his spear. How he had the presence of mind to charge with the world on fire around him, Logan would never know. Strange things can happen in a fight. He chose Quai as his target, bearing down on him with a snarl, the flaming spear aimed at his chest. The witless apprentice stood there helpless, rooted to the spot. Logan barreled into him, snatching up his sword, sending Quai rolling across the road with his hands over his head. Then he chopped mindlessly at the horse's legs as it flashed past him. The blade was torn from his fingers and went skittering away. Then a hoof slammed into Logan's injured shoulder and clubbed him into the dirt. The breath was knocked from him, and the burning world span crazily around. His blow had its effect, though. A few strides further down the road, the horse's hacked front legs gave way, and it stumbled, carried helplessly forward, tumbled and pitched into the flames, horse and rider vanishing together. Logan cast about on the ground for the sword. Sizzling leaves whipped across the road, stinging his face and his hands. The heat was a great weight pressing down on him, pulling the sweat out of his skin. He found the bloody grip of the sword, seized hold of it with his torn fingers. He lurched up, staggered round, shouting meaningless sounds of fury, but there was no one left to fight. The flames were gone as suddenly as they'd arrived, leaving Logan coughing and blinking in the curling smoke. The silence seemed complete after the roaring noise. The gentle breeze felt icy cold. A wide circle of the trees around them had been reduced to charred and shattered stumps, as though they had burned for hours. The barricade was a sagging heap of grey ash and black splinters. Two corpses lay sprawled nearby, barely recognizable as men, burned down to the bones. The blackened blades of their spears lay in the road, the shafts vanished. Of the archers there was no sign at all. They were soot blown away on the wind. Quai lay motionless on his face with his hands over his head, and beyond him Blacktoe's horse lay sprawled out on its side, one leg silently twitching, the others still. "Well," said Baez, the muffled noise making Logan jump. He'd somehow expected there would never be another sound again. "That's that." The first of the Magi swung a leg over his saddle and slid down into the road. His horse stood there, calm and obedient. It hadn't moved the whole time. "There now, Master Quai. Do you see what can be achieved with a proper understanding of plants?" Baez sounded calm, but his hands were trembling, trembling badly. He looked haggard, ill, old, like a man who'd dragged a cart 10 miles. Logan stared at him, swaying silently back and forth, the sword dangling from his hand. "So, that's art, is it?" His voice sounded very small and far away. Baez wiped the sweat from his face. "Of a sort. Hardly very subtle. Still," and he poked at one of the charred bodies with his boot, "subtlety is wasted on the Northmen." He grimaced, rubbed at his sunken eyes, and peered up the road. "Where the hell did those horses get to?" Logan heard a ragged groan from the direction of Blacktoe's fallen mount. He stumbled towards it, tripped and fell to his knees, stumbled towards it again.
His shoulder was a ball of pain, his left arm numb, his fingers ripped and bleeding. But Blacktoe was in worse shape, much worse. He was propped up on his elbows, legs crushed under his horse right to the hips, hands burned to swollen tatters. He had a look of profound puzzlement on his bloody face as he tried, unsuccessfully, to drag himself from under the horse.
"You've fucking killed me," he whispered, staring open-mouthed at the wreckage of his hands. "I'm all done. I'll never make it back. And even if I could, what for?"
He gave a despairing laugh.
"Bethard ain't half so merciful as he used to be. Better you kill me now, before it starts to hurt. Better all round."
And he slumped back and lay in the road. Logan looked up at Byers, but there was no help there.
"I'm not much at healing,"
snapped the wizard, glancing round at the circle of blasted stumps.
"I told you, we tend to specialize."
He closed his eyes and bent over, hands resting on his knees, breathing hard. Logan thought of the floor in Bethod's hall and the two princes laughing and poking.
"All right," he muttered, standing up and hefting the sword. "All right,"
Blacktoe smiled.
"You were right, Nine Fingers. I never should have knelt to Bethod. Never. Shit on him and his fear. It would have been better to die up in the mountains, fighting him to the last. There might have been something fine in that. I just had enough. You can see that, can't you?"
"I can see that," muttered Logan. "I've had enough myself."
"Something fine,"
said Blacktoe, staring far up into the grey skies.
"I just had enough. So I reckon I earned this. Fair is fair."
He lifted his chin.
"Well then, get it done, lad."
Logan raised the sword.
"I'm glad it's you, Nine Fingers,"
hissed Blacktoe through gritted teeth.
"For what it's worth."
"I'm not." Logan swung the blade down. The scorched stumps were still smouldering, smoke curling up into the air, but all was cold now. Logan's mouth tasted salty, like blood. Perhaps he bit his tongue somewhere. Perhaps it was someone else's. He threw the sword down, and it bounced and clattered, shedding red specks across the dirt. Quai gaped around for a moment, then he folded up and coughed puke into the road. Logan stared down at Blacktoe's headless corpse.
"That was a good man. Better than me. History is littered with dead good men."
Byers knelt stiffly and picked up the sword, wiped the blade on Blacktoe's coat. Then he squinted up the road, peering through the haze of smoke.
"We should be moving. Others might be on their way."
Logan looked at his bloody hands, slowly turning them over and over. They were his hands, no doubt. There was the missing finger.
"Nothing's changed,"
he mumbled to himself. Byers straightened up, brushing the dirt from his knees.
"When has it ever?"
He held the sword out to Logan, hilt first.
"I think you'll still be needing this."
Logan stared at the blade for a moment. It was clean, dull grey, just as it had always been. Unlike him, it showed not so much as a scratch from the hard use it had seen that day.
He didn't want it back. Not ever. But he took it anyway.
Blade Itself, Part 2. Life, the way it really is a battle not between good and bad, but between bad and worse. Joseph Brodsky. Chapter 19. What Freedom Looks Like. The point of the shovel bit into the ground with the sharp scrape of metal on earth, an all-too-familiar sound. It didn't bite in far, for all the effort put behind it, as the soil was rocky hard and baked by the sun. But she wasn't to be deterred by a little hard soil. She had dug too many holes, and in ground worse for digging than this. When the fighting is over, you dig, if you're still alive. You dig graves for your dead comrades. A last mark of respect, however little you might have had for them. You dig as deep as you can be bothered. You dump them in, you cover them up, they rot away and are forgotten. That's the way it's always been. She flicked her shoulder and sent a shovelful of sandy soil flying. Her eyes followed the grains of dirt and little stones as they broke apart in the air, then fell across the face of one of the soldiers. One eye stared at her reproachfully. The other had one of her arrows snapped off in it. A couple of flies were buzzing lazily around his face. There would be no burial for him. The graves were for her people. He and his bastard friends could lie out in the merciless sun. After all, the vultures have to eat. The blade of the shovel swished through the air and bit again into the soil. Another clump of dirt tumbled away. She straightened up and wiped the sweat from her face. She squinted up at the sky. The sun was blazing straight above, sucking whatever moisture remained out of the dusty landscape, drying the blood on the rocks. She looked at the two graves beside her. One more to go. She would finish this one, throw the earth on top of those three fools, rest for a moment, then away. Others would be coming for her soon enough. She sucked the shovel into the earth, took hold of the water skin, and pulled the stopper out. She took a few lukewarm swallows, even allowed herself the luxury of pouring a trickle out into her grimy hand and splashing it on her face. The early deaths of her comrades had at least put a stop to the endless squabbling over water. There would be plenty to go round now.
"Water!"
gasped the soldier by the rocks. It was surprising, but he was still alive. Her arrow had missed his heart, but it had killed him still, just a little less quickly than she had intended. He had managed to drag himself as far as the rocks, but his crawling days were over. The stones around him were coated in dark blood. The heat and that arrow would do for him soon, however tough he was. She wasn't thirsty, but there was water to spare, and she wouldn't be able to carry it all. She took a few more swallows, letting it slosh out of her mouth and down her neck. A rare treat out here in the Badlands, to let water fall. Shining drops spattered onto the dry earth, turning it dark. She splashed some more on her face, licked her lips, and looked over at the soldier.
"Mercy,"
he croaked, one hand clasped to his chest where the arrow was sticking out of it, the other stretched weakly towards her.
"Mercy? Ha!"
She pushed the stopper back into the skin, then tossed it down next to the grave.
"Don't you know who I am?"
She grabbed hold of the handle of the shovel, the point of its blade bit once more into the earth.
"Feror Mal'jin,"
came a voice from somewhere behind her.
"I know who you are."
A most unwelcome development. She swung the shovel again, mind racing. Her bow was lying just out of reach on the ground by the first grave she had dug. She threw some dirt away, her sweating shoulders prickling at the unseen presence. She glanced over at the dying soldier. He was staring at a point behind her, and that gave her a good idea where this new arrival was standing. She dug the point of the shovel in again, then let go and sprang forward out of the hole, rolling across the dirt, snatching up her bow as she moved, notching an arrow, drawing back the string in one smooth motion.